Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together, we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your Homeschool Companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. I'm here with Linda Ferguson, and we're going to talk about your book, A Royal Dance, The Lion and the Butterfly Series, Book 1. So I like series, as others do too. I understand that you also have some experience with homeschooling. Maybe
share a
little bit of your background with our listeners.
Yes, I do. I started homeschooling my oldest son in kindergarten. He was homeschooled all the way through high school. My second son, all the way except for high school. And my third son, all the way through. So I'm an old-time homeschool mom. I loved it. Gave me a lot of fun times with my children. And, you know, surprisingly enough, they are happy I did it.
That is
They do not great. Have any regrets when I ask them that. And they say, oh, no, Mama, well, that's the best thing you could have done for us.
Yes. You know, it gives them the ability to really pursue their gifts, because school takes up a lot of time. Traditional school takes
it
up a
does.
Lot of time.
And, you know, I adopted my children after 16 years of being barren. I wanted time with them. I didn't want to send them off all day to school.
Yes.
And we had wonderful nature walks and fun things together. So that was good, too. Then my oldest son, he had a lot of questions, and such as, are there dinosaurs in the Bible and things like that. And it gave me an opportunity to help him find the sources that he needed to find the answers to that. And then my youngest son was a little bit more on the ADD side, and he struggled with attention. So we could take breaks, and we could walk and say, do things.
Yes.
So it's just a wonderful way to connect with my kids.
Well, and the fact that they were adopted, you know, that the adoption in itself, those children really need extra affirmation, and they need extra attention.
Mm-hmm.
They need that part of them feel that somehow was broken away at birth. And
yes.
I think that if parents that are adopting recognize that,
they
really can help that child. I mean, the statistics against children who are adopted as far as the outcome of their lives, it's really the rate of addiction is higher, the rate of suicide is higher. And so when you take that responsibility on and you can just constantly feed that child.
They need a lot of affirmation.
Mm-hmm.
That, and my oldest son deals with seizures once every 4 to 6 weeks. And so it's been difficult for him, but we've just connected in such a way that he feels more secure with who he is and his life.
Yes.
And so, yes, we've had some ups and downs, but it's been a wonderful experience.
Yes. Well, great. You know, my listeners are going to appreciate what you're bringing to the table today. And this is the story, A Royal Dance. It's a story, it's your story, but it's kind of like a parable, or you wrote it in a fictitious way. Why did you choose that style?
Well, God told me to write my story 35 years ago, and I told him I don't think so. He is so faithful to not give up on you. He kept pursuing me to do this. And so when I first wrote it, I just felt more comfortable talking about it, the daughter, the, you know, and for some reason, and I honestly don't know why, it just must have been God, that I put it in biblical time, like, you know, the high priest, you know, and so the parable took on another meaning besides just my story. I was born miraculously on May 14th, Mother's Day. And so I think that's part why I chose it, because May 14th, the nation of Israel miraculously was born. And it was on Pentecost, too, that, so I started my story when the church was kind of born on Pentecost, so to speak. And all that kind of went together to help me start it there. Once I finished it, my editor and I looked at it. The timeline was not quite right, starting it on Pentecost when the church, because I was trying to keep it very accurate. It's just, I did so much research on it. Once I got it turned into a novel, the parable side wasn't so hard. It was the novel part I'd do all the research. Anyway, I had to move the timeline of the story beginning in 20 A.D., on Pentecost, still on Pentecost, so it was before the church actually, you know. Jesus was Yeshua, and the family knew him as the carpenter that came on the feast days three times a year, and he would visit her, Jerusha's father, the main character, in his carpenter shop, and he was a family friend. And so she knew him before ministry time. And so it's best I can do to explain how it happened that way. My editor, after I got done with the parable, said, "You have to write this as a novel." And I said, "I don't know how to write a novel." And she took me under her wing for 9 months, and chapter by chapter by chapter. And we only made it through one third of the novel, so we have at least three, probably four, maybe five other books that are going to follow this family.
How interesting. So how did your family support you in this journey?
I have three sons adopted, Samuel, Stephen, and Josh. My husband was a support to me always. That's interesting you asked that, because back when I first was asked to do this, a friend said, "Well, pray about whether you're supposed to write this story." I laid three things out before the Lord, and I said, "I need a typewriter." Does that tell you how far it was? I need my husband's support, and I need a desire to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband for Christmas gave me a typewriter without knowing a typewriter. I think back, that's just laughable. But I knew that part, and then the desire to do it took a little longer. God kept pursuing it. And so I had great support, and my children have been extremely supportive. In fact, my oldest son, Samuel, would like to do some writing himself.
And it's so great for a parent to model. You know, so much of what we teach is caught.
That is
the
very
example.
True. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about a royal dance. Just the title. Let's start with the title, because
okay,
there's so much in a title. Mm-hmm. So why did you call it a royal dance?
Well, that came from my editor. I was just telling the story and the parable in more detailed form. But what happens at the beginning of the book, little Jerusha is in her father's, is in the garden with the butterflies, and her father's working in as a carpenter there and making things. And he says, "Jerusha, never forget who you are. You're royalty. You're from tribe of Judah. You're going to dance before the king one day." You know, they're looking for the coming king at that point. And she flitters around in the garden. Then this difficult situation happens to her with the high priest's son, this abuse. And she hides it. Mm. She's so shamed. And she's thinking, "Father can't know this. He won't think I'm royalty anymore." So it kind of started there. And also, and then by the end, I won't tell the story, finish the story, but she dances her way somewhat it's a kind of an allegorical, mm-hmm, allegorical term, but that's what God used for me too, intimacy with him and my own private time with him, mm-hmm, and the music would come on, and he began to let me know how valuable I was to him, not because of anything I did, but just he loved being with me. So I would in the middle of the night wake up, and I just felt like he would say, "Come dance with me." And I would go up and spend time in the Word and read, and the music was on. And then I find myself standing up and putting my arms out and twirling around. "I love you, Jesus." Mm-hmm. And he would tell me he loved me. And gradually that began a healing process where he began to speak to me. It wasn't the only thing, but a real big part. So
yes,
that's why the royal dance title. I didn't start out calling it that, but that's
that. Yes, that's beautiful. So with the Me Too.
Hashtag Me Too.
Yeah. So with that movement happening, you know, right when this is all kind of coming together for you, have you been able to reach out to others in a way?
Oh, yes. I've been very surprised. I shouldn't be. God does something. He always says it's good, and he always has his hand on it. But it's part of that old abuse thing that tries to get on you and telling you nothing you do is good enough. That's why he also, I think I had got healing through writing it. And so when the book came out, I was telling my editor, crying before it came out, I says, it's not good enough. It's not good enough. I could tell you everything wrong, you know.
And yes.
She said, it is not. Stop talking that way. So the Lord spoke to me and said, it is good. I created this with you. What I create, I speak, it is good. So that helped me. And so I found a reader that I had read it before I had it come out. I didn't know she'd been going through same thing, really much more severe than I. She called me. She's crying and crying and crying. She said, this is my story. Thank you. This is bringing so much healing. It's the story of forgiveness as well, because you have to forgive. That kind of is the beginning process of it. But you have to admit you have an issue first. Most of us just don't want to own up to that there's a problem there. Mm-hmm. You know, you're so shamed. So, yes, it's been many women have told me how much it's blessed them.
You have to take a break right here. But when I come back, I want to talk a little bit more about forgiveness, fear, forgiveness. We'll be right back. You've been listening to Homeschool Companion. You know, we'd love to hear from you. Be sure and like us on Facebook at Homeschool Companion, or partner with us. Send us a contribution or a show suggestion at P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland, 21783, or call us at 301-824-3162. Welcome back. I'm here with Linda Ferguson, and you can go to the website. It's all spelled out, LindaFergerson.com, Linda Ferguson, and we're talking about her book. It's written as a novel, but it's based on her experience, her life. It's called A Royal Dance, The Lion and the Butterfly. And just before break, we were talking about why we don't forgive. And as you were talking, just dawned on me, we don't forgive because there's a part of us that's very fearful. And the fear, I don't know which comes first, the fear and then not even realizing that we need to forgive, or that we don't want to forgive, or that we don't think we should forgive, that it's unforgivable. Do you have an opinion on that?
Yes, I do, because I grew up with tremendous fear. My whole life, I didn't understand why. See, this happened to me, and I closed it off. I'm not thinking about it, not talking about it. It's over there. And I was living my life, but I had so much fear. Fear of the dark. Fear someone's going to grab me. A monster's going to get me. Fear, fear, fear. And a lot of anger. I would rep in these things. Where did that come from? And it was only really after I got married that I recognized there was this problem. Because my intimate relationship with my husband just wasn't where it should be. I could not accept his love in the way I should. And so one day I'm thinking, why am I having this problem? You'd think it had been obvious. Mm-hmm. And I watched this TV program, and this woman was given a testimony about her abuse and how she forgave. And it was like a light came on. I thought, I need to forgive. And you know, the biggest person I needed to forgive was myself. I really didn't do anything wrong. but you think you did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I really didn't need to forgive myself, but there's so much self-hatred in mm-hmm. your own life. You just don't like yourself.
Yes.
So I chose to forgive my abuser. I just didn't, it wasn't an emotional thing. I didn't feel any love for him. I didn't, you know, but I chose to forgive. I said, Father, I choose to forgive them today. Please help me out of this. And he gave me the most beautiful, I don't know how to explain it, you know, people call them vision, dream, whatever. My eyes were closed, but I saw him on his throne. I couldn't see his face, of course. But I saw him, and I was sitting on his lap. And he spoke to me, heard the words, don't be afraid. See, it's that fear. Don't be afraid to receive your husband. He is a gift from me. And something just washed over me. And that was the beginning of the healing process for me. And from there, I gradually got more and more healing. But that was the moment at the time when God will wake me in the middle of the night and come be with me.
Yes.
And so intimacy began to happen with Jesus simultaneously as I was being able intimate with my husband in a greater way,
that
more
is
pure way.
So beautiful. That is so beautiful. And I just know that, you know, we prayed for the Holy Spirit to be with our words. I know that it is resonating with a listener or maybe more than one listener. It's a big problem. You know, we, as long as we live on this sinful planet, we are going to be bombarded with sin in one shape or another. And if we can forgive, how beautiful is that?
Yes.
That's just so beautiful. So this book is written now. Are you doing workshops? How do you help other women? Are they reaching out to you?
Some individually, they reach out, you know, mm-hmm. that they read the book. I need to get the message out farther and farther. That's why I'm so happy you're doing this interview. I am going to women's retreat in June in Kansas, and just wherever I'm asked to come and speak, I will go, and I would tell the message of hope in him, whatever difficult, dark place that you might be in. He wants to take you like the butterfly up out of that darkness into the light of his love and his kingdom. And so, yes, I have anywhere anybody wants to invite me, I'd be glad to go. But I love the personal one-on-one times when people just reach out to me. Also, I do know, and I believe with all of my heart, that the book itself, I'm hoping and I'm believing, because my husband and I pray over the book every night. Lord, whoever's touching this book, whoever's reading this mm-hmm. book, who's ever, reach out and touch them in some way. And I do believe that as somebody reads through that book, if they've been in the place where I was and have never told anyone, my heart is that they will reach out and tell Jesus.
Yes, yes.
And when they do, he'll meet them and mm-hmm. he'll help them to come up out of there. And their journey might be different than my journey. He might choose a different way to help them come out. That's just my story, how mm-hmm. he worked with me. But I know that he's the hope and he's the answer for them. So I'm just excited to be here today to share with you.
And the wonderful thing is when God gives you a ministry or a mission, mm-hmm. you don't have to stress out about how you're going to get the word out, because he is going to open up doors just like I'm sure he already has.
Yes. And this conference I've been overwhelmed with this conference and the many opportunities to share, but there's always somebody you run into mm-hmm. on the plane that and this thing about it is, I don't know if I've gave you the statistics that I found, that one in 10 children under the age of 17 suffer sexual abuse, and 20% of them under the age of 8, and 60% of them never tell anyone. So I'm hoping through my book, this is a non-threatening way that they'll tell Jesus at least.
Yes.
I ran into three people in this conference in an interview. When the interview was over, they said, do you know that I knew an 80-year-old or a 85-year-old person on their deathbed told somebody for the first time that they'd been abused?
Wow.
Three people already in this conference that never told anybody until
wow.
their deathbed. So what's unfortunate is that all of that wounding probably affected them possibly
mm-hmm.
all of their life. With
yes.
And so it's so critical that you tell at least Jesus.
Yes.
Because he's the one that's going to bring you out.
It does. I mean, it's a known fact that women who are abused, if they don't deal with it, it affects their sons particularly, but their daughters as well, because mm-hmm. they can be over-controlling. They don't want to, I mean, it's out of the best motivation. It's
yep.
out of the best motivation.
Yes.
They don't want to have happen to their children what happened to them. But then the opposite can happen because they'll actually control their children from their own spouse and create this, you know, lack of love and good affection from their own husbands because they don't want, you know, it to even look like or there be a possibility. It's just, mm-hmm. I think I'm a victim of that. I've never suffered abuse, but I know my father wasn't allowed to even pat me or hug me. He
oh.
loved me so much, but he had to do it from afar because my mother had been abused and she just didn't want that to happen to her
yes.
daughters.
Yes.
So, you know, it just has far, far reaching consequences.
It has many different tentacles that it can touch people.
Yes.
It isn't something happens overnight. The healing process takes some time and there's a lot of different layers,
mm-hmm.
but God knows just how to do that, you know.
Yes.
And the control is funny because I was a little bit controlling with my children, not all with good intent.
Yes.
It wasn't the controlling that you're talking about, but I had to, one day the Lord had to show me, Linda, you've got to let go and trust me
yes.
in this. And they've been so gracious, my children, to forgive me for those mistakes. Because I would go to them and I'd say, I'm so sorry, you know, that
yeah.
I acted that way. And they're so good to forgive.
Well, you know, there's no perfect parent. And you know you're a mature adult when you forgive your parents for their mistakes, right? Is there a
yes.
saying like that? I can't believe we've already come to the end of our show. I've been talking with Linda Ferguson, and you can go to the website. It's all spelled out, Linda Ferguson, and make sure you spell Ferguson, FERGERSON.com. We're talking about really the story of her life written as a novel called A Royal Dance, The Lion and the Butterfly. This is book one. We look forward to book two and book three.
Book two comes out in May.
Okay.
It's finished. A Royal Family, and it deals with Jerusha's barrenness and the Jew-Gentile
yes.
issue back then.
And those things are often intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, our bodies, if we've suffered abuse, often we suffer infertility as adults. So all of that is a lot to digest, I know, but thank you for being with us. And I have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
I thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.